TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Yos. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Score North Live with Matthew Coller.
Ozette leaves it in. There's 10 seconds to go in the Western Conference Finals. Seven remaining. And the St. Louis Blues, for the first time in 49 years, have done it. You can bring out the Zamboni. The Blues will go to the Stanley Cup Final and face off against the Boston Bruins.
More like the St. Louis snooze in this series, because St. Louis and Boston is about the most boring matchup of all time. But really? I will tell you folks that are in the studio right now, Lindsey Brown and Declan Goff, the other two voices of the Judd Hockey Podcast, which, are you going to change the name ever to like Lindsey, Declan, and Judd Podcast?
No, I guess it just has to be dominated by Judd.
I like being in the other category.
Yeah. Okay, well,
it's a comfortable place.
Want to talk hockey with you guys, a great rumor in a second, but I would like to brag to you first that at the beginning of the playoffs, I contribute sometimes to ESPN Plus some hockey writing. So everyone at ESPN picked the Stanley Cup finalists, and I picked St. Louis and Boston. Boom.
Well, I picked St. Louis, and I picked did not pick Boston out of spite. So yes. Congrats to you, Matthew, though, for going two for two.
Why did you pick St. Louis? Was it the same reason as me?
Well, just beginning of the playoffs, you know, they had been playing some really good hockey, and I like their roster. I like their matchup against Boston. I think it's actually going to be a really intriguing series, even though you don't, but I think it's going to be fun.
I think it'll be kind of, just like the matchup just doesn't really light my pants on fire.
Who do they
like,
play in the first round again, the Blues? Do you remember off the top of your head? Because I picked them to lose is what I was about to get at.
God. Like I just had them off.
Yeah, it was very long ago, but the reason I picked them was because I looked at their 5-on-5 numbers and thought over the last 4 months, they have been one of the best 5-on-5 teams. And I predicted that the NHL would not call the same rules through the regular season, and it would be the 5-on-5 play that would determine how good they would be, and not anything to do with their special teams. And lo and behold, the NHL had no idea what it's doing with its refs. And
well, that's every
penalties.
Year, though.
Exactly. So I thought that the regular season results wouldn't exactly be reflective of the Stanley Cup final. But let me get to this rumor.
What rumor?
It's a rumor.
What's happening?
We got a trade rumor. The Athletic is reporting that the Minnesota Wild and Pittsburgh Penguins have discussed a trade. Jason Zucker and Victor Rask for Phil Kessel and Jack Johnson. Lindsay, let me start with you and get your reaction.
This is 100% hard pass on this deal for me, and it's not even close. I don't want Jack Johnson on the team, not because he's not a good person, but because I don't like his music. But at the end of the day, what the big...
Let me make the lame jokes, Lindsay.
Well,
that's just... That
I think
awful.
It was a good joke. I don't think it's lame at all. Jonathan's laughing along with us in the the glass here. Liar.
Don't misconstrue me like that.
But the two big names, obviously, that are associated with this deal are Zucker and Kessel, and I just don't know why the Minnesota Wild organization, or pretty much anyone really, thinks that it's a good idea to trade someone younger, faster, and I won't say more skilled, but a little bit more involved in the locker room and with production in terms of just being a voice and a personality on a team for someone who is older, slower, and has a history of questionable work ethic issues.
So I love it because he is a proven goal scorer. Team doesn't have one. He's a beast on the power play. The power play is hopeless without Dumba. He's the exact kind of finisher this team needs. And even though he's up there in age, I am all on board this train. Jason Zucker, I'm so done with the peaks and valleys of Jason Zucker. And Jack Johnson, you're inheriting a bad contract. You're giving away one to get another one with the whole Victor Rask swap there. And if you can get rid of Victor Rask and Zucker, and even though you're inheriting Kessel, who's going to be making $6 million, and Johnson's going to be making...
$8 million, not $6 million.
A good price. I'm okay with it because I think it also sets things up for more activity in free agency.
Well, so here's my issue with the deal is if you were talking about just player for player and which guy is better, who is better at the hockey,
yeah.
It's not really that close. It's Phil Kessel. He's a much better playmaker. He's a much better scorer than Jason Zucker is. Jason Zucker's best year is an average year for Phil Kessel, and not even that. I mean, he's a guy that's
average year where
80 points multiple times. I'm talking about over the last 4 or 5 years.
And where has he been in the last 4 or 5 years?
Pittsburgh, but he has not been playing with Sidney Crosby.
Yeah,
but he's playing with Evgeny Malkin, who's a pretty good player.
He has got a lot of time with Evgeny Malkin, but even when he wasn't, even when he was with Toronto and it's Tyler Bozak, he's scoring 80 points. So this is a guy who could score you 80 points for sure. My problem is that he is going to be 32 in October. And if you're talking about giving away Jason Zucker, who has a lower contract and is much younger, for someone who's 32, when your expectation is that the scoring and production will go down, and there is some part of it that's playing with Pittsburgh too, so you wouldn't project 92 points. I have trouble making the math work there. And I also think Jack Johnson's one of the worst defensemen in the NHL. Yeah. I think he's like a bottom five, top four defenseman.
I just don't get why everyone is on the warpath with Jason Zucker. Did he have an off year? Yes. Did he have a worse production than he did the year before? Yes. But this team was obviously a very different team than it was the season prior. And I'm not a huge fan of shipping out players when you've had a limited sample size like the Victor Rask deal, or with Jason, where he just signed that deal and he just basically committed to be here, and he's been a huge part of this community. And whether or not you like that part of it, part of his personality or their involvement in his family's involvement in the community, he still is a speed demon in this league. And that is what this league is moving towards. And that is what this league is built on. And I just hate trading away speed, especially if you're trading it away for someone who is considerably slower and whose game is not conducive to the type of play that is, that the league is moving toward.
And it really speaks to the direction of the team, is why I would find it so questionable. Mm-hmm. Is okay, Zucker isn't young. He's 27. You know what you have here. What you have is a guy that will have some volatility in his scoring. He's up and down. He gets hot. He gets cold. And in the postseason, we have seen this when the game slows down, that teams are able to stop Jason Zucker in the playoffs. And that's a huge concern for sure. But are you trying to rebuild this thing around Ryan Donato and Kevin Fiala and creating a new core? Or are you going to have Koivu and Staal and Kessel be your guys that you're actually trying to win a Stanley Cup with next year? What is your direction?
Yeah, that's why I think there's something else in the works here. If it's going to be you're inheriting Phil Kessel, I think there's going to be some other move that's going to be happening, either another trade at the draft or at the free agency opening. And like you said, Phil Kessel can come here, and he's played with Tyler Bozak, and he's still been able to put up points. But I have some trepidations if his main primary center is Mikko Koivu. We saw that with Thomas Vanek, right? We saw a guy who was a proven goal scorer get put with a defensive forward, and it just didn't work. And so there is some trepidations about that. I think I'm worried, too, that he's like best friends with Ryan Suter. I don't want Ryan Suter to be any more comfortable and any more in position of power than he already is in that locker room. So that does scare me a little bit for sure. But it is an interesting move, because I think it's Fenton just like putting a stranglehold on this team and being like, no, I'm going to do it my way. He let go of all those analytical guys. He's basically going to fall on his sword for all the moves he'll make here in the next 2 years, whether they're right or wrong.
I have to tell you, when they hired Fenton, considering the record that Nashville had and David Poile, I thought, oh, wow. I mean, if you can make some of these moves, this is the direction that you need to go. But like you guys have alluded to, you wouldn't be bringing Phil Kessel into the same environment as a Pittsburgh Penguins with Sidney Crosby as the clear-cut franchise player, face of the National Hockey League for the last decade and a half type of player. You are bringing it in with a team with a bunch of older guys who have never quite fit in that locker room. It's been a conversation since I got here and before that of, how does this locker room actually fit? And you're bringing in somebody that Pittsburgh wants to part ways with. For why? Why does Pittsburgh want to get rid of him?
And that kind of leads to my next point, Matthew. And my question is that why are the Wild giving up so much to a team that is second in the league in terms of least amount of cap space, which the first place team is Vegas, who literally has $0 in cap space. The Penguins only have $3 million to work with. And somebody named Matt Murray, who's won them two cups as a goaltender, one as a rookie and one as the year after, is up for a contract and is going to be due at least $6 million a year. Why are we giving up arguably the biggest asset to the team to the Penguins, and they're asking, and they're giving us Phil, who's high price, older, slower, all these other things, and then Jack Johnson. I don't understand logistically how this deal is even considered in just terms of having, you know, who has the power in the negotiations. The Wild should be all over this.
Doesn't it make sense if you're trading Jason Zucker because he is 27 years old and he mm-hmm. does have a decent contract? I mean, like a reasonable contract here, but if you're trying to shed money, then you can move some
it's
out
considerable
with
enough.
Him. Wouldn't you try to be moving him for some NHL prospect who was on the cusp to come up who could be some version of Jason Zucker? Isn't that what they did with Mikael Granlund and trading him for Kevin Fiala? Was you're trading Mikael Granlund for a younger Mikael Granlund in Kevin Fiala, and with Ryan Donato, you're looking for a better Charlie Coyle that sort of to fill in that spot in your top six for a very long time. That makes a lot of sense to me, though. I mean, even though the Victor Rask trade has blown up on them, it's still the other deals that they made to me made a lot of sense because of what your timeline is supposed to be, that you're resetting the clock a little bit, mm-hmm. saying, all right, maybe next year is not a huge year for us, but then 2 years from now, as we develop more players and have a younger roster, land a big free agent, and we're off to the races. Trading for Phil Kessel just goes completely against this.
It doesn't make sense in the immediate in for next season, and it doesn't make sense for the next 3 years to bring Phil Kessel in here. Sorry, Declan.
You're good. I think the ownership too has a say in this a little bit with Craig Leopold, and he's a more active owner, and he had to be persuaded to get rid of those core guys, right? So I think also this move of getting in Kessel is Fenton's way of saying, all right, we won't have to bide our time with Phil Kessel. We know who Phil Kessel is. He's a proven goal scorer. So we're going to trade one of our most marketable players to get the best offensive player and the best weapon that we could possibly put on this team right now. And that would be Phil Kessel. So I mm-hmm. think that's where they're leaning towards. I agree that financially speaking, this doesn't really make a lot of sense if you're trying to shed light and get more and get younger, because you're literally getting older by trading a 27 for a 31-year-old. But Phil Kessel automatically on this team becomes the best offensive player.
And I get where you're saying, Declan, where you can... Jason is probably going to be moved, and that might be the right move. I just don't think it is for Phil Kessel. I don't think that's the right move to make. There have been talks that Vegas has been interested in maybe considering sending up Jonathan Marchessault up here for Jason Zucker. I would take that every day and twice on Sundays.
I'd be interested in that.
I would 100% take that into account. But that's where we're running into, is that I don't think Phil is going to make that big of a difference on the ice or in the locker room that's going to make this deal worth it. And then... also, he has the power to veto this. That's why this trade deal hasn't gone through yet. It's because he has the say on where he wants to go. And apparently, that same Athletic article, he's not too keen on coming here. And I can't really blame him.
Is it because he's from Wisconsin?
A little bit. That might have a little bit to do with it.
Well, and plus, just look at the organization. And you're talking about trading Jason Zucker, who was a year and a half ago the next superstar on this team. You re-sign him to a deal, and then he doesn't perform up to expectations. You're like, see you later, dude.
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense.
I always thought it was fool's gold with Jason Zucker that he scored 33 goals. And, of course, it happens on a contract year.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think that those two things, I think it's coincidence, and then we put them together. But he had a high shooting percentage that year. A lot of things were going right. Now, if they had been looking at keeping Granlund, keeping Coyle and that core together, mm-hmm. and then adding Phil Kessel to that, saying this is going to be our final piece, I'd be excited by that. Is it like, this is okay,
that's
this is kind of fun.
Different conversation. Yeah.
I just can't make the timelines match. And we've been through this with hockey, and basketball is like this for sure. If you're not trying to win the Stanley Cup, like, you have to be trying to position yourself better for the future.
Right.
This one, they would paint it as trying to win the Stanley Cup, but Phil Kessel does not get you there at this age. He has been a better player at times in his career than he's going to be going forward here, and couldn't get Toronto really anywhere. And I kind of look at this team as the same as Toronto was when he was there, which was...
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah, we're so embarrassing.
Right? But that's how it is. We're trying to rebuild, but we're also trying to win now, and doing both things at once is pretty hard. Let me ask you, too, about the Stanley Cup Final. Now, I made my jokes, but I'm going to watch anyway because it is the Stanley Cup Final. Lindsay, you go first. Who do we think is going to win between the Blues and the Bruins?
I either want Blues in four or Blues in seven. I want the maximum amount of heartbreak inflicted on the Bruins. I want nothing to do with Boston. I hope that they get smoked 8-0 every time.
Why is that? What is
because Boston sports and just Boston sports fans are pretty much the worst people in America. And I've spent considerable amount of time out there. I went to college out in the East Coast, so that's kind of where I get it. And I just, they win all the time.
They really
I'm
do.
Sick of it. And it's not that they just win all the time. It's that they take out billboards and say that, hey, it's been 100 days since we won our last championship. It's not the fact that they win. It's the fact that they are cocky and arrogant and just terrible human beings.
You know what's funny is the Twins being in first place. We come in every day and are like, oh, man, what is there to talk about? The team's in first place. Mm-hmm. They just win a championship in every sport all the time.
Right.
And I don't know what they talk about there. So who do you want and / expect to win?
Well, I want St. Louis just from the fact that they haven't been there in 50 years or whatever it is. And Boston, though, they're just so good. I think they're a much more superior team top to bottom.
Really?
And you know, the young goalie for the Blues has played so well, and I thought he'd come down to earth hard, especially it was the Jets they played in the first round. I thought they wouldn't stand a chance against Winnipeg, and he stood on his head, and he's already has 12 wins already in the postseason. I mean, this guy's 22 years old, and he's ready to playoff tested. I would love for nothing more than a 22-year-old to shut up the Boston Bruins. I just think it's going to be too much.
And I'm not sure that Tuukka Rask is going to be able to keep it up.
He played really well last round, though. He's really solidified his game.
It kind of makes me think about like Marc-Andre Fleury last year, mm-hmm. where he played super well, but we kind of know that Marc-Andre Fleury has some shakiness to him. Tuukka Rask has always been that same way, where he's had
100%
the shakiness
agree.
To him.
Yeah.
Lindsey Brown, Declan Goff, they are part of Judd's Hockey Podcast, and you can follow them on Twitter. What are you, at Lindsey Brown or something?
At Lindsey Brown 35, the greatest number in the world.
Okay, and you?
At Dex Tweets.
Add the S.
D-E-X.
I've forgotten the S.
There's the Declan Goff. He's Australian. He has one follower. I've been trying to get rid of the handle for years. I can't do it.
All right, guys. Thanks for coming in. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Lexi Brown of the Minnesota Lynx will join us here on the show to preview their opener on Saturday. We will do that when we come back. You are listening to Score North Live. You're right about that, Jonathan. Great content by me. A ScoreNorth.com contributor. At the moment on ScoreNorth.com, we have two different things written by me, and I'm going to read them quietly to you for the next 7 minutes until Lexi Brown comes on. One of them is
this is the great content we're talking about, by the way.
Great content at ScoreNorth.com that I will read to you now. There once was a man named Kyle Rudolph who did not like his contract.
Apparently.
That is one of the articles, and something really interesting that I did not have a full understanding of, that Joel Corey was on the Scoop podcast and talked about, and Doogie mentioned yesterday when he was in here, but it's just got me thinking quite a bit now about the Vikings cap future, is the fact that they still have to make cap room. It was my feeling when they restructured Eric Hendricks' contract that they would be okay after that, and it sort of ended the Kyle Rudolph conversation, but they still need to make space for the practice squad, for IR, for the PUP list, things like that that come up, and instead of the 51, they'll have the 53 active people, and then they will also have, you know, the players that go on the practice squad they have to pay for. That starts to add up, and they do not have enough money for that now. Joel Corey on the Scoop podcast did a great job of breaking that down, but also breaking down how the Vikings have put in these contracts like Eric Hendricks that they could take some of the cap money, and Courtney Cronin wrote about this as well. I saw her tweet thread about how they could take some of the money from base salary and turn it into bonuses whenever they want to in a few of these different contracts that they've done recently, and Kyle Rudolph is not one of those that they can do that. So they have to actually convince him to agree. And what Joel Corey mentioned, and he was a former agent and also works for CBS now, is that when the team once came to him asking to restructure a player to convert to, you know, base salary to bonus, he said, well, we're going to need something in return here. We're going to need a little, you know, extra financial reasons to transfer that money. And he said that the Vikings weren't too thrilled about that, as you would expect. But if you're Kyle Rudolph, it's probably the same thing. It's probably, why should I help you when that's a bargaining chip for me to get a longer term contract? If you're Kyle Rudolph's agent, why are you helping out the Minnesota Vikings when you're trying to get the most money out of the Minnesota Vikings? That situation entirely has become uncomfortable at this point. And I don't remember Anthony Barr's ever getting there. We talked about earlier the impromptu press conference to refute rumors that didn't exist. But it never felt weird between the Vikings and Anthony Barr. There was one day where he sat out practice and we thought maybe something was going on there. And then he was back on the practice field the next day and we almost never talked about it again. Throughout the season, we barely talked about it with Anthony Barr. It's like, how's it going for you? Pretty good. You want to rush the passer more? Yeah, okay, all right. You're probably going to get paid. Like, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot there. There really wasn't of conversation about Anthony Barr's contract. Through the entire year, the assumption was that he was just going to hit free agency and everybody was going to kind of like shake hands and go their separate ways. It did not go that direction. He ended up coming back. This one has felt much more tense and much more like sniping from both sides, including Kyle Rudolph saying yesterday that he knows that some teams are interested, that he's been told that. And well, that's really something, isn't it? That he's essentially breaking the news that teams have tried to trade for Kyle Rudolph, which has been out there. And the Patriots have been rumored to be interested. But saying that through the media, like, oh, well, I want to be here and everything, but other teams are interested, so I could go somewhere. I wonder what it was with him that has made him want to play hardball in this way. And I think it's a combination maybe of wondering what it could be like on the free agent market. A lot of guys here in Minnesota have just decided to stay. But when you look at how light it is for free agent tight ends out there, usually you're going to get paid. Trey Burton got $22 million guaranteed. Trey Burton, who had done nothing in comparison to Kyle Rudolph, except for throw the pass in the Super Bowl to Nick Foles. Like, that
was the second tight end there, and he gets $22 million.
And I liked him as a potential option for the Vikings, but he was too expensive because he got $22 million guaranteed and $30 million total. He's younger than Kyle Rudolph, but nowhere near as proven. And if you're Rudolph, you probably look at that and go, hey, I mean, if we're going to sign a long-term deal, I got to be getting more than that guy. My price is going to be pretty high. And if you're the Vikings, you're looking at the situation saying, sorry, we just don't have that type of money to spend on you. Now, the best scenario is to have him just play out this year, see if you win, see what you have in Irv Smith. And if Irv Smith isn't that great, maybe you revisit it. And if he is, then you're good. But if he is so dead set on not playing on this contract, which it's starting to come across like he is dead set on not playing on this contract, then your options come down to essentially trade him away or you just cut him. And that's about it. I mean, there really isn't anything else you could do other than signing him to the long-term contract. You don't have any real leverage here. And Rudolph knows that, you know, rookie tight ends, they don't always make a huge impact. And he also knows that this is a win now year and that the quarterback probably needs him to succeed. So he's got all the power in this negotiation. And I guess if we were trying to put Courtney Cronin isn't here. Usually she does the pie charts and messes them up. But if we were trying to put pie chart of probabilities on which way this will turn out, I guess we're probably looking at extension is still the most likely, and then trade and probably cut is last, but there's also the possibility that he will hold out and then things get pretty messy. So if you got a thought on that or the potential trade for Phil Kessel that is reported by The Athletic, 651-646-8255 is the phone number. Now to preview the Minnesota Lynx opener against Chicago on Saturday, guard Lexi Brown. Hi, Lexi. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I am doing really well, and I'm excited for Saturday. What do you know about Chicago, a young, fast, exciting team? I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, no, I just know from when we played them last year, they have a lot of weapons at all positions. They have a great point guard. I'm in a great shooter. I think they're the team that has a lot to prove this season, so we have to be ready on Saturday for sure.
Now, what I like about Chicago's roster construction is kind of how yours with the Lynx looks now, with young players who can play fast and a lot of great athletes. I enjoy watching Diamond Shields play, and I guess I'm curious about how this Lynx roster with young players and people who are new here like yourself is starting to take shape, and if you're getting an idea of what your identity is going to be.
I think our identity right now is just a team that's going to play hard. I think we have a lot of depth at every position, which is something that is probably new. I mean, like you said, we're super fast. I think this is just a really excited group. Also, another group that has a lot to prove this season. You know, playing with players like Sylvia and Simone, you know, they're amazing vets with a lot of experience, and, you know, they've taught us a lot the last 2 weeks of training camp. So I think we're just excited to, you know, finally start playing in some real games and against someone that's not us or our practice guys.
Yeah, for sure. And I know that Sylvia is pretty fast for a big, and I know that she wants to get running now that you've got some more quickness on the team. I'm wondering, Lexi, just how it's been for you over the last, I guess, year plus here of getting drafted. You're drafted 9th overall, but then the opportunity just wasn't really there for Connecticut, and now you're here with a chance to play a bigger role. So what has that roller coaster kind of been like for you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it went from, you know, super high to super low really fast, you know, getting drafted, a dream come true, and then as the summer went on, realizing, you know, this season just wasn't going to be that type of season for me. But I had to stay in the gym, you know, stay in shape because I knew I had another season overseas coming up. So, you know, I had to stay ready for that. I think playing overseas was the best thing for me. You know, I got some confidence back. You know, I got to play a lot and be an important part of a pretty good team. So coming back and, you know, being a part of this team, you know, it's been amazing. I came in with, you know, a different type of attitude than I did last season. You know, I'm not the lonely rookie anymore. I have a year of experience under my belt. So for me, I think I just wanted to come in with a little bit more confidence than I did last year, not second-guessing myself and also being like a sponge for all the information that they have for me.
How tough is it to sit when you had so much success at Duke? You were 18-point-a-game player, you played big minutes, scored a lot of points, and you were you know, such a key player on that team. I think it's really difficult in this league for anyone, even who gets drafted high like yourself, to crack rosters. We're seeing it right now with Megan Gustafson being cut after being picked in the second round. And so a lot of players end up in your position because there are so many established stars in this league. So how tough was that for you in Connecticut to have to sit?
I mean, it was tough, but I had to keep reminding myself, like you said, how hard it is to even get a spot in the WNBA. So, you know, that was something that kept me, you know, have a positive outlook for the entire year. But these women in this league, you know, they can play for forever. And at a very high level, you don't see, you know, 10, 11-year vets, you know, chilling, kind of like Vince Carter. I mean, shout out to Vince Carter, but, you know, he's on his little veteran, and he's just chilling on the end of the bench, and he comes in when he feels like it, does his thing, and just, you know, sits on the side. But these vets, you know, they want to win. They want to be big parts. They want to be all-stars, you know, so it's, you know, super competitive. But, you know, it's fun. So when you make it, you know, onto a team, whether you're playing a lot or not at all, I mean, you're still on the team. You're one out of 144 players, which I think people kind of forget how competitive this league really is.
Shout out to Vince Carter for still making me feel young. I saw that Kenyon Martin's kid is playing now, or is like a top recruit. I was like, wait, how old am I if Kenyon Martin's kid
exactly.
is playing? But Vince Carter's still in the league. I'm still good. Talking with Lexi Brown of the Minnesota Lynx. They open on Saturday, 7 p.m. against the Chicago Sky. If you want tickets, you can visit lynxbasketball.com or call 612-673-8400. Now, Lexi, I'm really interested in something that you tweeted the other day about Kobe Bryant, and there was a clip of his daughter doing a nasty spin move, and she's 13. You are also the daughter of an NBA player, Dee Brown, who's on NBA Jam. Do you know your dad's on NBA Jam? How cool is that?
Oh, yeah. He let us know, for sure.
I cannot tell you how much NBA Jam that I played, and it's awesome. And I used him and Robert Parrish. They're a pretty good combo on
That's
NBA
hilarious.
Jam.
That's so,
I yeah, you can't really gun threes with him all the time, but you could definitely dunk, and Parrish will play D.
Sure.
So, but you were tweeting about that sort of relationship with your dad being a former NBA player, and I was hoping that you could just kind of talk about how that developed as your career has gone along and you've become a pro as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like I said in the tweet, it's a very different process when you have a daughter that plays the sport that you play compared to a son. You know, we didn't have, like, the social media and all that kind of stuff when I was younger. So, I mean, I feel like Gigi might have a little more pressure on herself because, I mean, still to this day, I mean, there's a lot of people who don't know that my dad is my dad. Like, it's really funny that I think maybe almost every day I have someone in my comments like, oh my gosh, I didn't know your dad was D. Brown. I didn't know you were his daughter. So things like that. It was just, it's just fun. It was a really nice way for me and my dad to get super close. I mean, I think we would have been close regardless, but it's a more delicate process. I mean, there was no pressure. It was just fun for us. You know, we get the whole family involved. You know, we're a really close-knit family, so we didn't really have that many outside opinions, outside people, you know, with the decision-making and the training until a little bit later. So I can credit my dad for, you know, 90% of my game, you know, was built by him, you know, from the ground up. And it was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, but it definitely paid off.
Did it help you that your dad was part of professional sports in the business to understand what was happening last year with Connecticut and waiting for your opportunity like you're getting here? Because I would think that he would be familiar with kind of how all this can work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he just told me that. Even last season when I wasn't playing, he was just like, when you do get the opportunity, because you will, because there were a couple games where I was kind of thrown into the fire and I was ready. I mean, he told me, you know, I just need to stay ready. And, you know, we just got to keep putting positive vibes into the universe. And he said, your time is going to come. Your situation will change. We don't know when, but it's going to change. But he just told me to, you know, keep working hard. And pretty much the summertime was preparing me for my overseas season so I could do what I needed to do over there. And I did, so I think I credit him and my mom and a lot of my family members for keeping me positive and hardworking.
And Lexi, speaking of your tweets, sorry, I follow you, so I've noticed these things. But you were tweeting this morning just about the coverage that we're seeing increase with WNBA. And when Cheryl Reeve was on the station the other day, we talked about it, that there's such growth opportunities in this league and The Athletic going all in, covering every team, a lot of other websites getting in. I think it pressures mainstream to cover more and gives more opportunities to tell your stories. So, I mean, how does that benefit you when you see that the coverage is increasing around the WNBA?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I think it's awesome for the visibility for our league, for one. You know, there's a lot of players in this league who have amazing stories to tell. And, you know, aside from what they do on the court, our off-the-court lives are super interesting as well. Even at the high school and college level, I've seen more coverage specifically high school players. I've seen more coverage of them. You know, I feel like from there, you can develop followings, you know, that leads from high school to college, college to pro. We still haven't been able to see why that gap between college fans and WNBA fans is so big. But, I mean, I think a big part of it is because players like Megan and, you know, other really talented college players, you know, don't often make WNBA rosters their first season. So, you know, the fan base kind of drops off a little bit. But I encourage a lot of people, you know, still give the WNBA a chance. I mean, I feel like in the next couple years, there's going to be an influx of young players because I feel like it's going to be around that time. You know, after the Olympics pass, I feel like we're going to see a lot of these vets, you know, decide that, you know, maybe their time is up in the league. But to see the coverage is amazing. Social media has been a huge tool. I think us as WNBA players do one of the best jobs, you know, interacting with our supporters and people who, you know, support the WNBA. And it's really exciting because when I was younger, you know, there barely was any coverage of WNBA ever.
I only saw
the WNBA up close and personal because my dad was a coach. So I feel like for younger girls, you know, who are interested in playing, I mean, it's great for them to see, you know, what type of amazing people are in this league.
No, yeah, you're right, because a lot of even players who are in the WNBA, if you ask them who they grew up watching, they'd be like, oh, Kobe or something. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Okay, but what women did you grow up watching? And
it's
harder to get answers. And I think, you know, my theory on that, why the college game ends up being more known, I think, widespread, is because of the coverage ESPN gives the NCAA championship tournament. It's like they go all in on it as kind of to go up against the men's tournament or to benefit off of it, and it gets a ton of coverage. And I wish that they would just carry that over. It's like, oh yeah, there's a game on 2 p.m. on Sunday or something, and then there's a half an hour special. Like, I don't understand why they don't really buy in more to that.
Yeah, I feel like it's coming, and I feel like we're putting the pressure on TV stations and stuff like that, you know, provide more coverage. I mean, our games are pretty good. We have some really, really, really good players in this league, and I feel like we don't get the credit we deserve, and I think it's coming slowly but surely. You know, we play basketball 365. And, you know, it's a tough job. And the fact that we can come here and, you know, give our all when we get back, you know, even, I mean, this league is so important to all of us, of course. But, I mean, I feel if some players wanted to just go overseas and chill in the summertime, they definitely could. Mm-hmm. But this league means something to us. And that's why we decided to play in it. And I think the growth is coming. I mean, we're taking baby steps, but baby steps is better than taking no steps at all.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, Lexi, you'll enjoy how loyal the Minnesota Lynx fan base is.
I've already seen it. It's awesome. I mean, when we were walking around, you know, the city and the airport, I mean, people recognize us, and it's really cool feeling.
It's I didn't grow up here, and it's very different from where I grew up for how much people pay attention to women's sports around here. And I think it's a major benefit of living here for people that the Lynx mean so much. The Gophers women's basketball team, Lindsay Whalen, it's important to the Twin Cities, and I think that that's great for you guys. So anyway, I really enjoyed this conversation, Lexi. On Saturday, it is you and the Minnesota Lynx against the Chicago Sky. If people want tickets, it's linksbasketball.com, or you could call 612-673-8400. Great stuff, Lexi. I hope we can catch up again.
Thank you. Sounds good.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. That's Lexi Brown. She's a guard they traded for, and I was excited when they traded for her and kind of couldn't believe it because she was a first-round pick. She was dominant at Duke. She also shoots 92% from the line at Duke. What?
What did you just say?
She shot 92% from the free throw line.
How's that even possible?
I have no idea. 92%. That's outrageous.
That's anyway. So good.
So I really like that there's a new look to this team, and mm-hmm. I'm excited for it. I will be there on Saturday. I think I'm trying to get Manny to go. I am in this awkward position, Jonathan, because my wife is their play-by-play person.
Mm-hmm.
And I initially bought season tickets for me and her. But now she will be there already calling the games on the radio.
Yeah.
That I have to ask people to go with me all the time. And it's like my worst nightmare. I don't like when people ask me to do stuff. Like,
right.
Even if I want to do things and want to be part of stuff and whatever, when people ask me to do stuff, I'm like,
and now you're asking people to do stuff.
Yes, because if you don't want to, if you just don't want to, there's always the, you know, I got something going on that day or whatever. Like, yeah. No, just tell me. Like, it's fine. Right. If you don't want to go, like, I'll find somebody else. Maybe.
But you live in the state of Minnesota, so we're not just going to tell you
straight
up. I know,
and that's how I preface it. I have told all my friends here and everybody in the station, like, I'm going to invite you to games. And if you don't want to go to a particular game, just be like, nah, bro. Nope. Don't want
to
go.
You can give them permission to do it. We're still not going to do it.
That's the thing. I feel like Minnesota's will not do this. They will not be like, I don't know, man. I'm going to probably watch TV.
Yeah. I'm going to watch the Twins right now clowning Los Angeles. 6-0.
Oh, really?
Bottom already? Of the second at 6-0.
We interviewed Lexi Brown and they scored 6 runs?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Destroying them right now.
I've been accused, Jonathan, of beating a dead horse.
I saw that.
Kyle Rudolph.
Should we talk about it again?
You know what? Here's my problem with this tweet. I don't have a problem with someone accusing me of beating a dead horse. That's how sports work.
Like, right.
Hey, LeBron. I was tired of hearing about that guy. You know? This is how it goes.
One of the greatest basketball players ever.
When you have something interesting, you talk about it more than things that aren't interesting.
Yeah.
So that's usually the formula. It's not a complex industry. But the problem I have is that the person tagged Kyle Rudolph in it.
Yeah.
To me, that's a loser move, is tagging the player like, huh, see, Kyle, they won't stop talking about you, man. Like, Kyle's not going to be your friend, dude.
No.
Nope. No, he's not. Don't do that.
He's not going to be like, oh, that guy cued me on to someone talking bad about me. I'm going to befriend him. Look, he's coming over to the next pool party.
Here's the other thing,
not going to do that, bro.
Kyle does not have AM in his car, so he's not going to listen anyway.
You may listen on the podcast.
Podcast. That's right. Wherever you can get them, download them. Get
it's
the
a great
show.
App.
Yes,
great
it is.
Content.
Purple Daily as well. We talked about it. So yeah, that is generally the concept. But I will tell you something, and I know we're late for break, so I'm sorry about that, Jonathan. But I'm a little bit exhausted of talking about Kyle Rudolph too, except for it's one of the more interesting stories in football. So I can't stop talking about it, but I wish we would have a resolution to it so we could move the story forward. Now, yesterday, he did that himself. Mm-hmm. We had let it go, largely. He brought it back up by saying there's other teams that want to trade for me, which doesn't sound like a guy who's desperate to stay in Minnesota.
Yeah.
He did that, not me.
He brought it up, and we are all just like, huh? What? You say something?
He could have easily, yesterday, said, hey, guys, I just can't really talk about this anymore, and, you know, we're working on it. We'll see what happens, and I'm excited for this season. I'm here, so I'm just... This is what Anthony Barr did last year. Anthony Barr said nothing. Every time he talked about the contract, hey, what's going on with the contract, man? Hey, I'm just here to play, and my agent's dealing with that. Adam Thielen, contract extension, same deal. Kyle Rudolph has brought the coverage on himself by continuing to tell us how unhappy he is with the Vikings and the way they've handled this. That's why it's still a story. Just thought I would get that out there. All right. Anyway, let's take a quick break. We will have only a minute to wrap it up. I am going to go golfing tonight, and it's windy, and that makes it more likely that I'll be terrible than already was likely. We'll be right back. Thank you, Jonathan. You mentioned that we'll have, maybe you mentioned this on the other side on the air or off the air. I never remember. We just like talk about sports and then I'm like, wait, did we say that on the air or off the air? But the Twins are now up 7-0.
Yeah, that was off air because it was 6-0 before we left.
Oh, okay. And CJ Cron just hit a home run to make it 7-0. Matt Harvey is pitching. This prompted me to go to Matt Harvey's stat page. First 3 years of Matt Harvey's career, he is a darling. Were they in the World Series one of these years, possibly?
Maybe.
He had an ERA of 2.27 in a full season in which he gave up 7 home runs and struck out 191, 178 innings. He was one of the most dominant pitchers in Major League Baseball. Had arm issues, came back 2015, still dominant. 2.71, what? Did someone hit another home run?
Yeah, you know who?
Miguel Sano.
Your favorite player.
I called this.
You did.
I called this. Right before we came back on the air, I said, he's going to hit a home run because it's 7-0.
He crushed it.
And he killed it. Yep. I knew it. I called this. I wish this had been on the air. When I said to you right before we came back, I bet Miguel Sano is going to hit a home run. Because the other day, he killed a home run when they were up like 17-0. And then now it's 8-0. With another home run.
I mean, that was a no-doubter. He crushed it. Absolutely killed this ball.
I do think it is going to be funny when Miguel Sano ends the season with 32 hits and 20 are home runs and a 176 batting average or something. Like Dave Kindred would
strikeouts.
Be very proud of this. Fascinating stuff earlier on our show when Eno Saris was talking about how strikeouts are actually bad. But him giving the breakdown was fantastic. It was one of those analytics thinking that strikeouts are okay. Like, no, they're not. Anyway, the falling apart of Matt Harvey's career after it was so exciting to watch him pitch is just sad. He had a 7 ERA with the Mets in 2018. This year, his ERA going into this game was 6.5. And now he's been murdered by the Minnesota Twins. I wonder if his career is over.
Yeah.
I don't know. All right, Mackie and Judd with Rami is coming up next. The Twins by then will have 32 home runs on the day against the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Hey, Rocco Baldelli, can't complain about this being rescheduled, huh? It's worked out okay. We'll be back tomorrow on Score North Live. Big announcement on the show tomorrow. Okay, bye.
Matthew Collar, Score North. Great stuff, man.
Great having me.
Thanks,
wasn't
as always.
It?